Radha Rani ki jai, Vrindavan Bihari Lala ki jai, Shri Radharani ki jai, jai jai Shri Radhe. Barsane wali radhe, Shri Radhe Radhe Radhe. Today in Braj Mandal, we will give you the transcendental weather report. This is transcendental samachar, divya samachar. News from the spiritual world. Breaking news from the spiritual world. It's 24 degrees. There's a beautiful Deer Shamir cool breeze blowing from the eastern side. It's been raining for the last 2 hours. All the trees are smiling with green leaves. The flowers are laughing with their colors. People are feeling relieved, satisfied, happy, and refreshed. And it's the day of Balaram's appearance day for the Brijvasis. As you know, Krishna's leelas are eternal, and they're going from one universe to another. So when Balaram's appearance day finishes at ISKCON, and 10 days later or so, it starts in Braj Mandal. Every Hindi calendar and also the calendar here for the local Bengali population of Radhakund, they have a Bengali calendar. It says today is Balaram Chot, the sixth day of Bhadra Shukla, Shukla Paksha and Bhadra Mas. It's called Balaram Chot. It says Balaram Jayanti and says Shri Balaram Utsav, Janam Utsav. So in Dauji and Gokul and Mahavan and Nandagaon and all over Braj Mandal, everyone is rejoicing today, Balaram's birthday. Krishna's big brother. Of course, he's Rohini's son, but he was adopted by Yashoda and became the nearest and dearest Dubai, the brother, the Dauji. So all the devas are blissful. Basically, all the devas are working for Anantashesh, and they're all working for Krishna. Anantashesh expands into Vishnu forms, and Vishnu forms and Anantashesh and Sankarshan are all expansions of Balaram. So all the devas and all the universes, they're all very pleased because their boss's birthday is today. Balaram is Anantashesh, Balaram is Vishnu. Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma control this universe. I think everyone agrees on that point. So Vishnu, who's the boss? Who's the boss of Brahma? And who's the boss of Indra and all the other devas? The 33 crores. Vishnu, and who's the origin of Vishnu? Balaram. And it's his birthday. So then all the devas are joined together. Vayu is blowing beautiful winds. And the thunder god, the sound, it's beautiful sounds, and Varuna's pouring water, and Indra's throwing lightning bolts, and everyone's rejoicing. And Balaram is bowing his foreheads. All the trees bowing down are Balaram bowing his head to Balaram. Brahma bowing his head to Balaram, all the trees bending down. It's Abhishek, Balaram's Abhishek. And they're all getting ready for Radhasthami. Generally, we see every year in Radhasthami, it rains at some time, late the night before. Of course, it's actually Ashtami the night before. Generally, it's Ashtami the night before. It rains when we're staying in Varsana, up in the hills of Brahma, places of Brahma, and the temple around 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, it will rain. Or that morning or that day, it always rains. This, everyone's excited. Today is Balaram's appearance day on Chot, and tomorrow is Saptami. On Sunday, that's Lalita Sakhi's appearance day. And then the next day is Radhasthami on Monday. So it's a very auspicious time. Balaram is Anangamanjari. So Anangamanjari, Lalita Sakhi, and Radharani appear. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. One after the other. So this is very fortunate. It's said among Brijvasis that if it rains on a Saturday, it hasn't been raining for some time, and rains on a Saturday, then it used to, it was a custom and a tradition which they observed over hundreds of years, that the skies would continually pour forth rain for 7 days, from Saturday to Saturday. But I was asking about Ajkal, Kahoga. What happens these days? And then I was unhappily informed that these days not so much, less rain. Because they're also telling me even 30 years ago, when it was in the rainy season, it would rain every day for a month, at least a solid month, every single day it would rain, at least a month out of the four. Or two and a half months are scheduled for the rainy season, officially. Varsha Ritu. Varsana means rain, means water. Varsane Wadi. Varsane Wadi means, like we say, Wali or Wadi. They say Wadi in Rajvasha, Wadi. It means, what does the word Wala mean? One who's controlling, a fall Wala is one who controls fruits or sells fruits, or what does Wala mean? He gives, he sells. What does the word Wala mean? He's a seller of?
From.
Wala means from. So full Wala, or a Sabji Wala, it's more popular. Sabji Wala, everyone eats Sabji but not flowers. Sabji Wala is one who is from the Sabji.
One who's hiding Sabji. Possessor.
Can be used in both ways.
Okay. Varsane means one who's from Varsana. Yes? Or what's the second meaning? So possessor, what did you say?
Yeah, like a Sabji Wala is the one who has Sabji.
Yes. So I was thinking of this term, that Varsane Wali means one who's possessing water. Barsh means rain. So Varshana means water, rain, means rain. So one who possesses rain, that's Radharani. Rain means liquid, means ras. So she's Raseshri Radha, Rasavati Radha. So Varsani Wali means one who is in possession of all the ras. Without Radharani, there's no ras lila. It's called ras lila, the lila of ras. Pastimes of Ras. When Radharani leads a Ras Leela, Hogya, no Ras, near Ras. So she's Varsane Wadi. So this Ras, this rain, is Radharani's rain of mercy. Very much appreciated. We're hearing, before we can appreciate the Ras of Radharani Seva, then we have to take shelter of her lotus feet. And we're hearing about her lotus feet, the symbols on her lotus feet. Yesterday we heard about one. And when Rai Ramananda was asked by Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Deya Madhya Jivera Kartavya Kon Dhyan, he said, for the jivas, what is the best form of dhyan, meditation? Should meditate on Brahman, or meditate on the Vedanta Sutras, Aham Tvam, Tat Tvam Asi, or Soham, or Aham Brahmasmi, Janmadi Asya Yataham. Generally they meditate on Soham. I am that, I am him, I am it. And then Ramananda Roy, he replied that the best form of meditation is to meditate upon the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. Radha Krishna Pada Ambuja Dhyana Pradhan. Dhyan Pradhan. The chief, the main, the primary method or most powerful method of meditation is to meditate on the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So this, of course, is our object of our meditation as bhaktas. We worship the personality of Godhead, who has personal face and personal features and personal feet. And of course, being God, Supreme Shakti, Bhagavan Sri Krishna and Bhagavati Radha, they have the most extraordinary features of their transcendental bodies. If we look at our feet, we'll find lots of random lines going in all kinds of crazy directions. Almost like if we lift up the top of our head and look at our brains, I'll see so many random thoughts going, so many crazy thoughts going in a million directions. So our feet don't have any really definite, specific symbols on them, generally. But when Radharani and Krishna move through the land of Vrindavan, they leave, there's beautiful footprints in the land of Vrindavan. And they become sacred objects of worship, Tadiyanam Samarchanam. Even the tigers understand the significance of those footprints, and they don't step in them. Even the cows understand the significance of those footprints, and they don't step in them. That's pretty amazing. 9 lakhs of cows, and that's only Krishna's cows. And Sridham has cows also. Vrishabhanu Maharaj has 7 lakhs of cows. We're hearing about the marks. We heard about the flag on the bottom of Radha and Krishna's feet yesterday. Now we're going to hear about the mean. The matsya, the fish. There's a little fishy on the bottom of Krishna's left foot and on the bottom of Radharani's right foot. Radharani's foot has a chariot on it. So when you're memorizing the symbols of the Radharani's feet, on her right foot she has R for Radha, R for right, and right and eight. Her right foot she has 8. I remember like right is eight. EIGHT, RAGHT. So she has 8 marks, and in the middle of the bottom of her foot she has a chariot. So when I think of chariot, I think of Jagannath Swami Ki.
Jai.
I think of Puri, and of course in Puri people eat a lot of fish. So then I remember that below the chariot there's some fish. Because sometimes below the wheels of the chariot of Jagannath, some fish eaters get crushed. They give up their body that way. Thinking they'll get liberation. So they throw themselves under the wheels and they get crushed, and also the fish in her belly gets crushed also. So there's a fish below the chariot on Radharani's right foot. Now we're chanting right now, we're chanting japa. Our eyes are closed, we're meditating on the beautiful golden feet of Radha, which have a beautiful sunburst splash of beautiful pinkish red color on the bottom, and we're meditating in the beautiful rain cloud colored feet of Krishna, which have a beautiful sunburst sunrise color, pinkish reddish color on the bottom. So it's pink and blue and pink and gold. So now we're in the pink area, in the pink city, and we're hearing about the qualities of a fish. So a fish cannot exist without water. So that fish represents the devotees. So when we meditate on the right foot of Radharani, we think that I'm a fish. Of course, that's true in general. That's kind of an American slang word, use a fish. But a fish cannot exist without water. You take away the water, there's no fish. So you take away Radharani's feet from the mind and heart of a Raghunuga Sadaka, then there's no devotee. There's no pran. The pran, the life of the devotee, is the feet of Radha. The life of Krishna is Radha's feet, what to speak of. He begs for those feet. He says, I need my life. I'm dying. If you give me your feet, I'll live. Without your feet, I will die. I'll be burned up. Smaragara Lakandanam. I'll be broken. I'll be burned up by the fire. There's different ways to burn. Some people burn on the fire of lust, and other people burn on the funeral pyre. The funeral pyre or the fire of lust? Pyre or fire? But Krishna is burning from the fire of attraction to Radha. And that fire can be put out. It can be soothed by attaining the feet of Radha. Her service, her darshan, her nam, her form, her rupam, her gunam, her leelam. Any association with Radha will pacify and fulfill and satisfy Krishna's hankering for love and Krishna's hankering for joy. We, like Krishna, are also hankering for joy and satisfaction. But he is Shaktiman, and he finds his satisfaction in Shakti, and we are Shakti, and we find our satisfaction in serving the Supreme Shakti. We are not Shaktiman. So our the buck ends there, as they say. The Shakti, the fullest extent of a Shakti's expression of seva and perfection is to serve the Supreme Shakti, which is not Lakshmi or Sita, but actually Radharani, the origin of both. So this fish represents devotees. They cannot live without the lotus feet of Radha Shyam Sundar. On Radha's foot, that fish indicates that Radha cannot live a moment without her beloved Shyam. So every aspect of Shastra has adiatmik, adi, daivik, and adi, bhautika, vichara, consideration. So the fish on Radha's foot means one thing to us, the adiatmik reader. But then on the daivik level, transcendental level, the fish on Radharani's foot means something else to Radha and something else to the gopis, and means, and then the anibhautika level is just description of the actual elements of the story or what's being said and what's being conveyed. So the charanchina of Radha and the charanchina of Shyam, the marks on their feet, which are so attractive, unique, special, and meaningful. It's a very nice meditation. Time to time in Asatika's life, he finds like a bell curve, they call it bell, it's like a bell curve. It goes up and then goes down, like a bell. Sometimes he's on a rise and things are going well. Mind is peaceful, body is healthy, sadhana is flowing. Things are turning out positively. Service is going on unhampered without any apparent obstacles or impediments. And he's cruising, so to speak. And then sometimes he goes, gets to the top and goes down the other side of the bell. He's sliding, so to speak, backsliding, as they say. Health goes down, mind gets disturbed. Obstacles present themselves from the people and the environment and the environment itself. Non-devotees and devotees, everything seems in opposition due to whatever reason. So in those troubled, difficult, disturbed times, when the sound of the name is not just simply flowing like a river through the land of your mind, then to meditate on the marks on Radha and Krishna's feet, one may continue that for several days on end and pass 16 rounds or 32 rounds or whatever his quota is. And if he does that or she does that, they will find tremendous relief and tremendous revelation. Usually people write books or present ideas in books which they have some familiarity with or some experience of. Otherwise, what's the point? So therefore, these ideas are presented in some of the ancient literatures like Matsya Puran, Skanda Puran, Garga Samhita, Sarta Darshani, Ananda Chandrika, Rupa Chintamani, Srikara Pada Jugala Samhariti, and other books by our Sad Goswamis, and some of the actual Puranas are glorifying, describing the meaning and location of these marks on the feet of Radha and Krishna. It's not a slight meditation. It's not an insignificant practice. It's the most potent and pointed and powerful practice of meditation for a bhakta sadhaka. So we can humbly recommend that practice. That sometimes we are so much disturbed we can't chant practically. But if we say, let me get out this book, or let me get some description of Radha and Krishna's feet, and systematically, step by step, go through, the flag, and then chant. And somebody can spend the whole 16 rounds meditating on the flag. And so many meanings will come, and so many nice experiences will come. So it doesn't really prove much for someone to sit and rattle about all their experiences, although people love to be entertained. And Kali Yuga people love to be entertained. That's why Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharata. And Valmiki revealed the Ramayana for the people of Kali Yuga so they could read and hear about all these things and be entertained and gradually accumulate enough Sukriti so they can get enough determination and enough purity and enough determination and realization to start practicing. So the real value is not simply for someone to say, this happened to me and that happened to me, this happened to me, that happened to me. This is what I did, you do it too and see what happens. In the beginning of creation, as you know, Tene Rida Yadadi Kaviye. In the beginning of creation, knowledge was conveyed in the heart. Even today, which is of course long after the beginning of creation, but even today there are gurus, siddha gurus, sadgurus, very powerful gurus. They don't give any shiksha to their disciples. They may advise you, they may have particular one-on-one questions, answers, etc. They may advise you read these particular scriptures, obviously, Srimad Bhagavatam and Goswami Granthas, etc. I'm speaking of Gaudiya, sants and gurus. But they don't, they say, you'll get everything from within your heart. So what's the example of this from the beginning of time?
Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma. Who's the first guru? Who's the first guru?
Krishna.
Who's the first disciple? Brahma. Did he get any books? Did he hear anything in his ear? Was any mantra spoken in his ear? Nothing. Tene, what is the verse? Tene, ridai, isn't that? Tene Brahma Riddhi Adikavye. He became a pundit. He became realized from within the heart. Riddhi, this word Riddhi. Krishna spoke in the heart, not in his ear. In his meditation, he heard the sound of Krishna's flute in the heart. Even in this Anahata Yoga, or Anahata Shabda Yoga, which we described briefly in Art of Chanting, when a yogi closes all the external gates, especially these gates of the head, the other ones are automatically closed by yoga bandhas. Sitting in certain postures, you close by, it's called bandha, bind. And then he'll go like this, out like this. We'll close ear aperture and the eye aperture, ear aperture and nose aperture. With a particular mudra, which is prescribed in the yoga shastras. And then he will meditate on his mantra. And in his heart, nothing outside, you can lock him in a soundproof room if you want. In his heart, he will hear a succession of seven different sounds. One is a kettle drum, dundubi, like rumbling of clouds. And he'll hear ganta, sound of a bell. He'll hear conch shell, and he'll hear kartals, and he'll hear a flute, bamshi. Not imagination, he'll actually hear. Brahma was meditating, doing the same thing. And in his heart, he received all this. Then, because Brahma was that much close to God, because that's the first position that the jiva takes is Brahma. Satyalok, Brahmalok, practically like Brahman, so everything can be in eternal. So, Paramatma to Atma. Who's in our heart? Paramatma. Who's next to Paramatma? Atma. So they don't need any books. They don't need ears. Ears are up here somewhere. They're right there. And then Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti. The soul and Krishna, they have these same qualities. That's like when we're dreaming, we hear in a dream, we see in a dream. So who is the seer? Who is the hearer? The mind. The mind is hearing, the mind is seeing, the mind is touching. This is how they explain Angani Yasya Sakalen. This verse in Ramasamhita says that Krishna can see with his ears. He can hear with his nose. You know this verse. All his senses are interchangeable. We have that same, every jiva has that same experience when he dreams. It's all these five functions of the senses are going on in one, in the mind. You dream, you see in your mind, you smell in your mind, all goes on in your mind. So that's the conditioned soul. So when one comes actually at the level of Atma, Paramatma, then it's full, practically all the qualities of God, Angadiyas and Sakalin. So there's no need for any speaking. It's all in the heart. Then Brahma, when he came, then he started, Brahma created entities of this lower plane of this world to inhabit this whole world below Brahmaloka, Tapaloka, Dhyanaloka, Mahaloka. And then Borbhuvaswa. So then he had to give the same knowledge which he received to his heart to his student, who was Narada Muni. So did he do it through the heart? Yes, no. No. He spoke. Mouth to ear, ear to heart. And so the transmission of knowledge is becoming more and more indirect. Then, as time went on, it used to be that way from mouth to ear, and everyone in Satyuga was a Shrutidhar. Then gradually things devolved, and they started writing them down on palm leaves and passing down. Then Vyasadeva wrote everything down. So now everything is coming this way. So back to my point, how there are many gurus, a few, even now, they don't speak anything. They tell their disciple, you'll get everything through the heart. And I've met disciples like this, and I say, yeah, any question I have, I chant, I meditate, I see my guru comes from my heart, and he speaks. Gurus of that caliber, that, because the guru is representative of Paramatma, and the guru is of that high level, then they, as a yogi can enter into an atom. Anoraniyan mahato yogika, anima, you've ever heard anima siddhi? Anima means anu. Anu means atom. A yogi can enter the atom. Haribol. Because is the atma smaller than the atom?
Yes.
Yes. Atom's a big thing. It's a big 1200 square feet apartment. Guys are so worried about a big apartment. You can live in an atom. The atma can live in an atom. That's interesting. Thing to meditate on. When you buy a big, big bungalow and big, big land for your big, big... Are you buying a big bungalow and big land for your ego or for yourself? Yourself is your atma. And your atma can live in an atom. So you're buying a big house and a big bungalow for your ego. To house your ego. That's how big your ego is. Three-bedroom ego, five-bedroom ego, two-bedroom, two-bathroom... 2,000 square yard flat, that's the size of your ego, 2,000 square yards. So this is a phenomenal thing. So when one meditates on the symbols of Radha and Krishna's feet and chants japa, then from within his heart, he starts to get so many realizations. And then all these obstacles and difficulties that he's facing in those difficult times of his life, they disappear. Because he's awarded so many new revelations from within his heart by the Lord. On Radha's right foot, the fish indicates that she cannot live a moment without her beloved Shyam. The fickle mind, the chanchal man, chanchalahi mana Krishna, said Arjuna, the fickle mind resembles a fish. That we know too well. Here, there, everywhere, and back to here, and back to there, and everywhere. Here, there, everywhere. My mind's taken me here, there, and everywhere. What's going to happen to me? So this is the mind. The fickle mind resembles a fish. So one must diligently practice meditation to fix the lotus feet of Radha Govinda in his heart. So this is the lotus feet of Radha Govinda can never live in a dry place. Like a fish. The mark on the feet represents a fish, and fish can't live in dry places. So Radha Govinda, they live in Rasadam. They live in the land of Ras. So if you're dry, then the lotus feet can't thrive there. They can never live in a dry place, so the heart must first become liquefied with loving mellows to attract the fish of their feet. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the definition of Bhava Bhakti. And we can see that definition, how it explains what happens to the heart as one advances. And we can just read that verse. It's very nice from Bhakti Rasamrita. What is the definition of Bhava Bhakti? This is from the first wave, third chapter, verse 1. Definition of Bhava. Shuddha sattva visheshatma prema sroyam shu samyabhak ruchi bishchitamasrinya kriraso bhava uchate. So this shuddha sattva visheshatma prema sroyam shu samyabhak. That when this Shuddha Sattva, this Vishuddha Sattva, when this Surup Shakti, or this pure transcendental goodness, which is Visheshatma, is a very special, distinguishable quality, when that enters the heart, coming from the pure devotees in the spiritual realm, then something happens, obviously. It's like a ray of light. When a ray of light falls on your face becomes illuminated. It becomes warm. It becomes, your skin becomes healthy. You can see clearly. So this, what happens is chitta masrinya, very important, he says. Chitta masrinya means the heart, the chitta, the consciousness, becomes masrinya, means becomes very soft. And then what does it become soft with? Aso bhava uchate. That softness is called bhav. So that softness, is water soft? I think everyone will agree that water is soft. The softest things can wear away the hardest objects. That's why compassion is so powerful. Tolerance, all these gentle qualities, they're so overwhelming. Hard-hearted people become overwhelmed by humility, gentle, soft qualities. The opposites, they work well together. So the preacher, he comes, Dante Trina, comes with a straw between his teeth and he approaches the Lord. So that water dropping on a stone, some little drops of water from the corner of a waterfall may be trickling somewhere in a mountain, and they're falling on a granite rock, a big boulder, every second. Dit, 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 dit. And gradually, after 1 year, 2 years, a little depression forms where that water lands. And the depression gets deeper and deeper with the passage of years. And after about 10 years, there's a big hole in the rock. And that huge hole, that big hole in the rock, and the rock can be 6 feet thick in it, as a hole where that water is dripping. So the softest thing, the drop of water, can make a hole, bore a hole in the hardest thing, a granite boulder, a granite rock. So the heart, which is like a granite rock, becomes softened by continuous drops of bhakti. Continuous drops of bhakti soften the granite heart, boulder-like heart, and gradually that bhakti accumulates and attracts the heart of the Lord and his nityaparishads. And when they're attracted by our bhakti, then the bhakti becomes transformed to bhav by the entrance of the shudas, that premamshu, samyabhak, that ray of prem, ansh, that ray of prem enters our heart as bhava bhakti. And then a melting starts. And our heart starts to melt. And when our heart melts, It becomes liquefied by various mellows. Of course, the initial mellow is dasya. Every mellow, regardless of the final fruition of the mellow, it all begins with dasya and separation. Dasya bhava and viraha, hankering to meet the master, hankering to serve the master and mistress, the divine couple, Swami and Swamini, Swamini Radha and Swami Krishna, Priya Priyatam. So then, with that softening of the heart and that liquefying of the boulder-like heart, that liquid heart, then Krishna says, "Oh, Radha, look, some new lake has formed here. Here in this, there's a new lake here. Let's go swimming there." So then the two fish, Radha fish and Krishna fish, because they're both, their feet have fish on the bottom, they jump in a lake of the purified heart. They start swimming there in the mellows of the pure heart. That's being described here. The heart must first become liquefied with loving mellows to attract the fish of Radha and Krishna's feet. The fish is Makara, is the insignia on Cupid's flag. Kandarpa, or Kamadeva, the god of love, he rides on a dolphin, I believe. Is that right? His carrier is a Makara. His Viman is a Makara. And a Makara is one of these special Vedic fish. There's one Vedic fish that's so big it can swallow a house. Prabhupada said in one tape, he's so big he can swallow a house. There's one fish called a Gila, which we usually don't hear about. So a Timigila is a double fish, kind of. So the Gila is a fish that's big enough to swallow a whale. That means he has a hell of a big mouth. We use that phrase in American slang. You have a big mouth. Just be quiet. Just shut up. You have such a big mouth. You know, you ever hear this phrase? You have a big mouth. It means you talk too much nonsense or whatever. So this guy, this Gila, has a big mouth. He swallows a whale. Then a Timmy, he's not timid at all. Timmy's not timid. Timmy the whale eater. Or the whale eater, or whatever. Timmy Gila, he's the one that swallows the one that swallows the whale. You got that? He's the one that swallows the one that swallows the whale. You got it? Starts with a whale, then he gets swallowed by a Gila fish. Gila. Then the Gila gets swallowed by a Timmy Gila. So when a Timmy Gila comes along, he gets two fish in one. Because he swallowed the Gila fish, which already had a whale inside it. So that's what I call three, you know, two out, two and one. You know? So the Makara is another type of special Vedic fish, and he's shaped like a dolphin, but he has an extended narrow snout or mouth, like a skinny crocodile, and has all crocodile teeth on the top and the bottom. Like crocodile chomps. And then on top of his, like on top of his, the top part of his mouth and bottom, there's some protrusion. Just like we have a head and there's a protrusion called an ear. That's called a protrusion, just sticking out of nowhere. So on top of his head, he has this thing sticking out. Like an elephant has a thing sticking out of his head. So it's actually shaped like an elephant trunk. So it goes like this. So sometimes you see an end of Krishna's flute, he has this thing that goes like this. And it curls up like that. That's the Makara, very extraordinary fish. It looks like a cross between a dolphin or a porpoise, an elephant, and an alligator. And that's the kind of earrings Krishna wears. And Radharani also. Now she doesn't wear those earrings. She gets female Makaris painted on her cheeks by the Manjaris. They take Kasturi and paint them there. And Krishna has Makara, male Makara earrings dangling on his cheeks. So when Krishna and Radharani dance cheek to cheek in the Rasa dance, then because everything connected to Krishna takes on the same qualities of Krishna. That can be dangerous. If you're a devotee man connected to Krishna, you take on the same qualities. It doesn't mean you can run around with everybody's wives. But you take on, so, but I'm saying that the objects or the transcendental paraphernalia connected to Krishna take on the same qualities. So Krishna is Madhurya Mayi Krishna. So the, when Krishna's dancing with Radharani cheek to cheek, then the Makaras, Krishna, they start kissing, Krishna's earrings start kissing the Kasturi designs of Makaris on Radharani's cheeks. They follow. The male and female fish start kissing. Then later, Krishna sees that and says, oh, that's a good idea. Thank you for inspiring me. Because Krishna's a little shy, so then the Makara, because the Makara are the god of love, so they have to show the way. So the Makaras, they get together. So now, that, so they have this fish. Radharani has a fish, a Makara, on her right foot, and Krishna has on her left foot. And they're the insignia or the symbol on Cupid's flag, and he also carries, he rides on them. So when the gopis, when they see that Kamadeva, mark of Kamadeva, that fish, Makara on Krishna's foot, it excites the gopis with desires for amorous fares or loving pastimes. And on Krishna's left foot, that fish also indicates that Krishna has conquered Cupid. And thereby he's showing Cupid's flag, because when you conquer someone, then you take their flag and wave it or whatever. And then during the pralaya, Krishna assumes the form of Matsya to save his devotees. So the fish on the bottom of Radha and Krishna's feet, it indicates rasa, it indicates saving grace and mercy of the Lord, it indicates divine love, it indicates the fickle mind, how to control the fickle mind, it indicates mind control. So many subjects are being mentioned here. It indicates the very life of bhakti. A devotee cannot live without the feet of the Lord or without the feet of his guru. So this is the second of 18 marks on the bottom of Radha and Krishna's feet. Krishna is infinite, and it's impossible to fit the infinite within our finite minds. Gyan has to retire. The power of knowledge and gyan cannot take us to Godhead. It's only faith. We have to take the lesson from Brahma. Don't be a bigger gyani than Brahma. Gyane prayasam urupasi namateva. We read that, we hear that, that he tried with his best knowledge-acquiring powers to put it all in his fist and figure it all out and get all the answers and ask all the how-to questions. He asked all the how-to questions and why questions, and he finally just threw his hands up in the air and threw his foreheads up in the air. He says, I quit. I can't figure it out. And now still, time and again, people come along, try to figure out Krishna, and try to crack their big brains on the subject matter. They end up just getting headaches, and they never really figure it out. So all the acharyas, they always say that gyan shunya bhakti. Gyan shunya bhakti. Bhakti devoid of gyan. Ultimately, all the knowledge will come by surrender. All the knowledge will come by seva. And all the knowledge is built on the foundation of faith. Faith transforms into surrender, surrender transforms into seva, seva transforms into more faith and attachment brings the mercy of the Lord, and when the mercy of the Lord comes, then revelation comes. And none of the things I just said have anything to do with, you know, accumulation of knowledge. Sambandha Gyan means to get enough knowledge to surrender and serve God. We spend so much time trying to figure it out that we never figure it out. I probably used to say that bhakti is simple for the simple and difficult for the crooked. That doesn't mean someone is breaking the principles or a gunda, but crooked means he's too complicated. Simplicity. Get the basics down and then get down and figure out the basics, then serve. Surrender, serve. And see, it's really simple. Chant. Do humble service and chant. Because as much as we study, as much as we try to approach Krishna and learn about him, then we approach him 10 steps with gyan, then he steps back 10 steps. Oh, I thought I knew something, but now he's becoming more difficult to understand. So it's an opposite thing. When we approach him with love and devotion, wanting to serve him, we take one step towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. When we try to figure him out, oh, you're trying to figure me out. You can't do that. Don't. Oh, Krishna, I'm going to catch you. Then, oh, and he runs away. Then you try, oh, no, I got to read some more. I got to read this book and this commentary and that commentary and all these things. And I'll catch you. I'm going to catch you. See, I got this down. I learned this. I got the Sandarvas and I got this. Okay, now. Acha. Okay, come on. And then you come. Oh, Krishna. Because ultimately, Gyan has to bring us to bhakti. And what does bhakti mean? Surrender and seva. It means love. Love is heart, not brain. And that's the problem in Kali Yuga. We have all brain and no, we have some brain and no heart. So we have to pray for heart. Pray for the heart of Radharani will somehow touch our hearts. Jai Jai Shri Radhe.